Welcome back, everybody. Oh, I'm jazzed up. Come on in, take a seat. You are a student of Everyman Academy. Whether you've been an early admission or a late acceptance, we are just glad to have you. Everyman Academy is part of the Just Three Murphs podcasting network. I want to give a shout out to my brothers because I've been having a fun time so far. Today, we will be covering the Pilgrim's Progress from this world to that which is to come, which is a 1678 Christian allegory written by John Bunyan, regarded as one of the most significant works of theological fiction in the English literature. It has been translated in more than 200 languages, never been out of print. It has been cited as the first novel written in English, and it is an experience. I really feel like I experienced this book in the best way I could. Now, there's a great biography in this book, too, and with any author, with any book, we need to understand the who wrote it to a degree. Who are they? That supplementary knowledge is so important. We're going into puritanical England, the stereotypical pilgrims, although this is in England. The outfits that I'm so used to growing up so close to Plymouth, Massachusetts as a kid. Yeah, they got the outfits on, and basically it's a story of his life. John Bunyan was not a prolific writer. He was really a preacher, Protestant. He was a religious leader, a minister. His own religious backstory is a big part of this, and I think that, you know, it's imbued through the story, Pilgrim's Progress, but he's known for this book, and he's known as an advocate for the Christian religion, living in this place of extreme guilt over his tendency to play little dice games, which feels so childish and innocent. It is a testament to the strict adherence to a moral code for the Puritans, especially in reaction to the excesses of the monarchy and the indulgence of the aristocracy, practitioners of a religious order, the Catholic Church. Once the Church of England split off from the Catholic Church, then you had a lot of other divisions too. John Bunyan, he's the narrator, and he's in prison. Then it's the story of Christian. Who he's encountering teaches us these little life lessons. That is a point of interest, but it obviously reflects the Christian worldview. So we get to understand that if we are like an anthropologist on the outside and we try to remove what we already know. Christian is plagued. He is crying and crying, and he's got all this sin. It's represented by a big pack on his back. All of a sudden, he realizes he's saved. Oh my goodness. And he runs away from his wife and his kids. And off he goes down the narrow path toward the celestial gate. And as he goes through on his path to the celestial gate, he meets many people. He goes on this journey. Quest meanders in a very typical way you'd expect from this type of book, a fantasy. Think Wizard of Oz, think Lord of the Rings, The Neverending Story. It kind of feels like that. He gets mocked by his neighbors in the beginning. Obstinance and pliable. Part of the fun of reading this book is encountering these individuals and thinking about what they mean. One of the early highlights is he goes through the Slough of Despond. Being a follower of Christianity, I interpreted it as the muck you have to wade through to figure things out. Now, there's a few points in this that I think are worth breaking down here. Probably two spots, significantly. One is this epic battle with Apollyon. I want to go into this a little bit and read a little. Describing this book is not really doing it justice. His confrontation with not Satan, but certainly a demonic, devilish appearance and apparition. We can interpret him as Satan or the devil, and that's how I interpreted it. What Bunyan's conveying here is it's not all fun and games when you're a Christian. It's not all kumbaya and hallelujah and I feel good all the time. There's also lots of negative emotions continuing to be consistent with your practice in Christianity, as he says here and shows here. So here we go. We're going to go into Pilgrim's Progress, Chapter 4. But now, in this valley of humiliation, poor Christian was hard put to it, for he had gone but a little way before he espied a foul fiend coming over the field to meet him. His name is Apollyon. Then did Christian begin to be afraid, and to cast in his mind whether to go back or to stand his ground. But he considered again that he had no armor for his back, and therefore that to turn the back to him with ease to pierce him with his darts. Therefore he resolved to venture and stand his ground, for thought he it would be best way to stand. So he went on, and Apollyon met him,
Now the monster was hideous to behold. He was clothed with scales like a fish, and they are his pride. He had wings like a dragon, feet like a bear, and out of his belly came fire and smoke. His mouth was as the mouth of a lion.
Whence came you, and whither are you bound? How is it then that thou hast run away from thy king?
I was born indeed in your dominions, but your service was hard and your wages such as a man could not live on. When I was come to years, I did as other considerate persons do, look out if perhaps I might mend myself. Then said Apollyon,
I am sure of thee now.
He had almost pressed him to death, so that Christian began to despair of life. But as God would have it, while Apollyon was fetching of his last blow, Christian nimbly stretched out his hand for his sword and caught it, saying, Rejoice, not against me, O mine enemy. When I fall, I shall arise. And with that, Apollyon spread forth his dragon wings and sped him away. What yelling and hideous roaring Apollyon made. He spake like a dragon, and on the other side, what sighs of groans burst from Christian's heart. I never saw him all the while give so much as one pleasant look till he perceived he had wounded Apollyon with his two-edged sword. Then it did indeed, he did smile and looked upward, but it was the dreadfulest sight that I ever saw. So when the battle was over, Christian said, I will give thanks to him that delivered me out of the mouth of the lion, to him that did help me against Apollyon.
I've heard of Satan. I've heard of the devil and Lucifer. But who is Apollyon? Apollyon in Pilgrim's Progress. I had to do some digging. Abaddon, the Hebrew, and Apollyon, the Greek, appear in the Bible as both a place of destruction and an archangel of the abyss. In the Hebrew Bible, Abaddon is used with reference to a bottomless pit, often appearing alongside the place Sheol, meaning realm of the dead. Who would have thought it would be so epic? In the book of Revelation of the New Testament, an angel called Abaddon is described as the king of an army of locusts. So that's the biblical, but it seems Abaddon has made some other appearances as well. John Milton uses Abaddon as the name of the bottomless pit in Paradise Regained. The name Azkaban, the main wizarding prison in the Harry Potter world, is a mixture of the name Alcatraz, an island prison in the real world, and Abaddon. So it seems that this demon or dark demonic entity has a bit of a reputation. I find the similarities between Apollo and Apollyon in the name kind of fascinating as well. That might be a conversation for a different time. I want to get into maybe the most important and climactic scene in this book. He enters a town called Vanity Fair. Now, what do you think when you hear that? Of course, the magazine. That adds so much more context, because Vanity Fair, as you're about to hear, is a horrible place. And here's a magazine. Everyone knows that this publication is not the handbook of good virtues, but to know that they're proudly and boldly representing such a horrible place as the name of their business is a whole nother detail and is a great example of the additional layer of appreciation and understanding we gain in our world by revisiting these classic books. I would have never known. Didn't even know this book existed. As Christian heads down the narrow path on his way to the Celestial Gate, the climax is Vanity Fair. Now the pilgrims on their way have to walk through this horrible fair. I mean, imagine going to like the worst carnival ever. Or one of those summer fairs with the crappy rides and it's overcrowded and it's humid. This is way worse.
What will ye buy?
But they, looking gravely upon him, answered, We buy the truth. That there was an occasion taken to despise the men the more. Some mocking, some taunting, some speaking reproachfully, and some calling upon them to smite them. At last, things came to a hubbub and great stir in the fair, insomuch that all order was confounded. Now, word was presently brought to the great one of the fair, who quickly came down and deputed some of his most trusty friends to take these men into examination, about whom the fair was almost overturned. So the men were brought to examination, and they sat upon them and asked them whence they came, and they had given no occasion to the men of the town, nor yet to the merchandisers, thus to abuse them. Therefore they took them and beat them and besmeared them with dirt, and then put them into the cage, that they might be made a spectacle to all men at the fair.
You get the idea. I won't spoil how that kind of builds up into an epic climax. There's also a moment, there's one moment that stuck out. There's a point in the second chapter where there is an interpreter showing these visions, different rooms of a house. Two children playing on the floor, one of them looking bored, the other playing quietly and contentedly. The names were Patience and Passion. If we think about this habit of reading, our passion is going. We want to read all the books. We want to do it now. Can we just finish the book and on to the next one so we can get to the end of the rainbow? Well, Patience is content, playing with the toys. We need to remember how impatient this little child Passion can be. Now, there is a second part, but this isn't a Don Quixote situation. I did make it through the second part, and it is nice that his wife and kids have their own journey, because in the beginning, it's pretty cold how he leaves them behind. But I want to break it down and talk about kind of what it all meant to me. This really felt like a man's symbolic journey through life as a Christian and what it means to be transformed, and both the warnings and dangers and the lessons that are required for Christian along the way towards salvation. Christian wants to be saved. Through the Christian theology, he is saved from the pain that he's experiencing in the beginning of the book. Although many things stand in his way, both people and places on the narrow path that represent larger themes in Christian life. John Bunyan feels very much connected, and we can hear his voice and worldview based on the way these experiences are written. So this journey through this fantastical world, it mirrors what Christian is going through. His spiritual quest is all-encompassing. There's nothing detached from this allegory. No part of this story or the environment is indifferent to what's going on. Now, every episode or chapter has a particular meaning. Now, Vanity Fair seemed to me to be a culmination of the world reacting to and rejecting a Christian philosophy. And we can compare the martyrdom that takes place in what we know about the historical Jesus. The opening draws you right in, begins with a man's personal problems, the coldness of the world around him. This journey is going to be lonely. The ending does resolve. Christian makes it beyond the celestial gate, saved, he sends into heaven. There's someone else there that he acquires along the way, the name of Ignorance, and he is cast straight down into the pit in a pretty brutal way. So it kind of tells us there, if you're ignorant, you're still going to hell. So, you know, Bunyan's not really giving us a lot of options here. This book says a lot about the sin of pride and what happens when you have a hard heart. Tells us about fear of the unknown, being seduced by the pleasures of the world, by pursuits that are carnal in nature, gluttony, slothfulness, pleasure-seeking at the cost of all else. A little enjoyment, puritanical life maybe took a little far. You can roll the dice now and again, right, Mr. Bunyan? The point is not lost. This is about excesses and what happens when you go down that road. Just look at the world today with all the addiction and vices. Oh man, maybe Bunyan was onto something here. You know, I do sympathize with his journey. I find this writing style very effective at gaining followers, I would imagine, due to the influence of this book. Interestingly enough, I found myself definitely having a strong reaction to the characters that represents sins that I'm not guilty of. I was easy to say, hey, get out of here. People that were representing sins and values or behaviors that maybe I am kind of guilty of, I was a little bit in my head like, you know, they're not such a bad guy. It's like looking in the mirror here. The author's views are laid bare here. Probably the most overt example you could ever imagine. He doesn't need to be subtle because this isn't an artful expression of the medium, but rather a conduit for his goal, which is gaining followers. And in this, it makes sense. Now, the story, it reinforces biblical truth. There seems to be many things that are humanist and universal, though. I want to know what those are, what you thought. So if you go to everymanacademy.com, leave a comment, hit me up on Facebook or Twitter, let me know. So the message in it all, the narrow path is difficult, but according to Bunyan, in this book, he's telling us it's a worthy pursuit, which is sales pitch for Christianity. I got so much out of this book, understanding the nature of these times in which they're written. It creates a deeper and more complex view of a certain period in European and early colonial European history, as well as the mindset. I often think through a modern lens, we can project our own understanding of the world, which is so different, it can become confusing. We're looking through the mists of time. Our goal is not to condemn, but to understand, finding those universal truths, having empathy for people, even when we don't agree with them. Well, that's what I try to do anyway. This was an epic journey. I highly recommend it. On the narrow path to a well-educated mind, you don't want to step over this book. Embrace it. Enjoy it. It's part of the experience, part of the process. Next time, I'm breaking down Gulliver's Travels, and I'm way more familiar with this. I remember that TV series with Ted Danson in the 90s. Please come back. Thank you for listening. I am Professor JT. This has been another episode of Everyman Academy. Class dismissed.